Welcome to Human Animal Science, a regular podcast on the science of anthrozoology.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for episode number 28 of Human Animal Science, the world's first podcast devoted exclusively to anthrozoology. My name is Tim Adams, and my co-host, as usual, is Mia Cobb. Hi, Mia.
Hi, Tim, and hello to our listeners. Originally from Singapore, Associate Professor Lian Pin Koh is a tropical ecologist by training. He received his PhD from Princeton University, where he studied environmental and policy implications of oil palm development in Southeast Asia. He then spent 3 years researching key scientific and policy issues concerning tropical deforestation and its impacts on carbon emissions and biodiversity while based in Zurich. Lian Pin now leads the Applied Ecology and Conservation Group at the University of Adelaide in South Australia, where they ultimately seek to do good for society. Today we'll be speaking with Lian Pin about his exciting conservation work using drone technology.
Hi, Lian Pin, and welcome to Human Animal Science.
Hi, Tim. I'm very happy to be here.
You're doing something that is quite special, aren't you? It's using drones, automated aircraft, I guess you'd call them, to study ecology. How did you, as an ecologist, come to be using drones?
So we started about 3 years ago. At that time, I was still based in Switzerland, in Zurich. And one time I was having just a coffee with a colleague who has been working on orangutans in Sumatra for a long time. He's Serge Wick, and he's been working in Sumatra for the past 20 years. So Serge and I talked about the challenges of monitoring orangutans, how expensive and time-consuming it is. So we came up with an idea of putting a compact digital camera underneath a hobby plane or a toy plane, fly that over the rainforest and see whether we could get good images of the forest canopy and potentially also capture images of the orangutan nests. And so that was how the whole thing got started.
So have you been a keen plane hobbyist before, or is this a completely new area that you had to really familiarise yourself with in the technology of how to get these things up and flying and taking photographs?
No, the whole thing was just an excuse for me to fly my toy planes. I've actually been flying remote-controlled glider planes in the Swiss Alps for the 2 years before we started doing this seriously.
So what sort of species have you used the technology to look at already, and what sort of data are you collecting?
So we've been helping many research groups and conservation groups around the world over the past 2 years. I guess I can broadly group them into two main types. There are the ecologists who want to use this technology for ecological research, and then they are the conservation practitioners. So from the ecology side, most of us are interested in capturing time series images of the forest or other natural habitats to keep track of changes in the landscape. So for example, to understand when and where trees or vegetation might be flowering or fruiting. That's very important ecological information. We are also interested in keeping track of where animals might be moving about in the landscape. And both those applications require just a very simple and compact digital camera. The other group, the practitioners, they are more interested in keeping track of people that might be moving about in an area they are not supposed to enter. For example, in Chitwan National Park in Nepal, they are flying these drones to watch out for poachers or their campfires, just to as a way of monitoring and enforcing the protected areas in those countries.
Can I just back up a step, Lianping, and just ask about, you actually had to develop a new model, didn't you? What you created to reduce the cost, is that right? You sort of built something from scratch for this purpose?
That's right. So, well, not entirely from scratch, but we decided from the start to build our own systems, assemble them from parts that are widely available and quite inexpensive, because we knew that both ourselves and our colleagues in the conservation community wouldn't be able to afford the commercially available systems that are tens of thousands or if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, the kind of systems that we are using and building for our collaborators costs just a few thousand dollars, oftentimes even less than $3,000. So these are not more costly than a laptop computer or a good pair of binoculars.
And how easy are they to operate, to program? Do you have to be driving it live as it goes around, or are you able to pre-program where you want it to go and go off and have a coffee while it does its job?
From the start, we wanted to build something that's very user-friendly. Although I'm a remote-controlled pilot, I knew from the start that most of my colleagues wouldn't have experience in that. So we went with a system, a hardware and software system, that's developed by an online community. So they are completely open source. It's continuously being improved, and it's designed with a non-technical person in mind. So to fly a mission, you don't actually need to fly it. You just need to be able to click on some waypoints on a Google map on this open source software on your laptop, program the mission that way, send the mission to the drone, and the drone would fly the mission autonomously. And it can even be programmed to come back and land where you want it to without any manual piloting.
That's fantastic. And does each drone have several mission sort of life expectancy, or are they just a one-shot wonder?
So each mission would be a standalone mission. Depending on the drone you are using and the application, some of these units can go up to 50, 80, or even 100 kilometers in total of flight distance. And they can go over hills and down valleys and do whatever you want it to do, videos and still images. When the mission is done, you can upload a new mission to the drone and have it fly to another area.
Has the drone enabled you to collect data that you haven't been able to collect before? And has that enabled you to learn things that perhaps you haven't been able to learn before?
So actually when we started it, as you know, our main objective was to capture images of orangutan nests to be able to count and estimate their population density in patches of forests. So after a few trials, we managed to do that with just a compact camera, and we were surprised at the resolution of those images. I think we were flying at about 50 or 60 meters above the canopy, and we could capture images of about 1 to 2 centimeters per pixel. At that resolution, we had a very good view or image of the nests, and we found out that the nests actually vary quite dramatically in terms of size, in terms of the types of vegetation that the orangutans were using to build their nests. And so we began to see, you know, as we collect pictures of more nests, we began to see a great diversity of nests. And we think that no one has actually had that information before. Even though people have been flying manned aircrafts over forests to count these nests, we never had that good quality images of the nests before. So that was a very exciting development for us. Normally, we would, in other places, we would fly them with either this still photographic camera to take pictures of objects. Sometimes we would stitch the images together using a third-party software to produce a mosaic of the landscape, which is basically a near real-time land use land cover map of the area. And those mosaics are very useful for people wanting to know where the forests are and to keep track of them over time. Sometimes we fly with a video camera. That's a setup that's very useful for patrolling national parks, for example, because it allows the user to see what the drone is seeing in real time and be able to detect any illegal activities.
I imagine that this is, you know, much less invasive for the animals as well than having, say, a helicopter go overhead or even just a light airplane, because it must be much quieter and less intrusive to their lives. And I also can see that it must be a lot safer from the terms of researchers rather than having to go deep into remote areas for extended periods. So are they sort of some of the benefits that you see from using this technology in this way?
Yeah, yes, exactly. So when we started it, when we started this project, we knew that there have been people who were flying ultralight aircrafts. These are single propeller and single person aircrafts over rainforests in Borneo, for example, to count the nests of orangutans from the air. But it's often a very risky thing to do because these pilots would be flying less than 100 meters above the forest canopy, and there's very little margin of error for maneuvering the aircraft out of any trouble or any problems. So these aircrafts can be useful, but they are basically too dangerous to operate on a large scale. And our conservation drones can do the same thing at even a lower altitude, and there is no risk to any humans. It's also quiet enough that the animals are not disturbed by it. There was a time when we were flying over a part of the rainforest in Borneo. The drone was flying at about 100 meters above ground. It happened that there was a herd of wild elephants in the forest, and these elephants were being tracked by a group of researchers. So the researchers could observe how the elephants were responding to the drones flying overhead. And the researchers told us that the elephants at first noticed that there was something going on in the sky, and they kept looking upwards. But after a few minutes, they got habituated and just went about their business.
They probably dismissed it as just a very large mosquito. So what do you think some of the challenges of using drones might be? Because the drones themselves, I guess, don't necessarily have a reputation as being a force for good in perhaps some parts of the world. Are there issues in perhaps getting acceptance of using drones for research purposes?
Yes, there are some challenges that need to be overcome. And I think the underlying problem, the underlying issue is not so much the application of the drones for research, but rather it's the proliferation of low-cost, easily available civilian drones, or mostly just toy drones, or toy quadcopters, for example. Nowadays, you can go out in a shop and buy one of these things for a few hundred dollars. And so there is a concern, and I think understandable concern, that our skies might be filled with these drones in the near future. So, for example, in operate one of these things in Australia, if you're doing it for recreational purposes, then you're fine. You can do that. But if you are doing it for commercial gains or even for research, then it becomes a bit more complicated. you have to get permission from the Civil Aviation and Safety Authority in Australia. You have to go through a whole process of certification. That's for the commercial applications. People wanting to use these for filming, for taking pictures of properties and other things, for example. For research, it's still quite a gray area. The last I heard is that CASA, the Civil Aviation Safety Authority, would need to assess applications for research on a case-by-case basis.
It would be nice to think that they would be a little permissive, wouldn't it, of the use of conservation drones, given that you're probably going to be using them in remote areas. You know, there won't be high human population density, and you're certainly not using them to invade privacy or for commercial gain. So it'd be nice to see them give you the green light on that.
Yes, that's what we are hoping. But for the moment, we are going through the whole certification process. So hopefully in a few months' time, we would be fully certified to operate these things. I do understand CASA's position because it is a bit worrying if our skies do become filled with drones flying about. And operated by people who might not be experienced in it. So although on the one hand, I hope that I have the green light for operating these things for my research, but on the other hand, I also would like to see some regulations applied to control or to manage the use of drones in Australia.
Absolutely.
Leanne Pin, what are some of the other applications you can see for this into the future, all around the world, I guess, not just limited to Australia, but what sort of context can you see it being unrolled in new directions?
I've already been in discussions with some of the South Australian natural resource agencies here. And many of us are interested in using the drones to locate, for example, a feral species or invasive species. I understand that is a big problem in many parts of Australia. And oftentimes, it's very hard to locate these, for example, feral goats on an island somewhere. And the hope is that we can use a thermal imaging conservation drone, so have an infrared camera attached to a drone, fly that over the island or the area of interest and locate them at night, which would be very easy to do because of the heat that's coming out from the animals. So that could be an exciting and pretty straightforward application of the drones that I hope to carry out in the near future, hopefully in the next few months.
I think you've probably got more potential applications for this technology than you could possibly even list. It's quite amazing and a real game changer, I think, as someone has said.
We like to think so. So far, I have been engaged with our collaborators from around the world as a non-profit organization, conservationdrones.org. And over the last 2 years, we've been doing this. We've been traveling a lot. At the beginning, it was hard for us to be taken seriously, especially by our colleagues in the academia. There was some resistance to it, and some people think that we are just fooling around with toy planes. But in recent months, and especially since I moved to Adelaide about 6 months ago, I have been receiving tremendous support, very encouraging support from the university and from all the government agencies. So I think people are beginning to see potential of drones for a whole lot of applications.
Okay, thanks, Leanne Pin, for giving us your time. This is a really amazing field, and I'm so glad we had the opportunity to chat with you. Maybe down the track we could catch up with you again and see how you've gone with expanding the application of conservation drones. So thanks for your time.
Tim and Mia, thanks for having me. It's great for me to be able to talk about my research and my passion, and I look forward to catching up with you again.
Thanks, Lee and Pim. If you'd like to know more about Lee and Pin, see some drone footage and the research mentioned in this podcast, we'll be posting all of the relevant links on our website at www.humananimalscience.com. Don't forget you can keep up with all of our latest updates on Facebook and Twitter. Join the Anthrozoology group on LinkedIn or subscribe to Human Animal Science via iTunes or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode.
That brings this episode to a close. Thank you, Mia, and thank you to all of our listeners. You've been listening to Human Animal Science, a podcast about anthrozoology.
Human Animal Science is brought to you by the Australian Anthrozoology Research Foundation and the Anthrozoology Research Group. For more information on anthrozoology and how you can support our work, please visit www.humananimalscience.com or you can find us on Facebook.